You're listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, episode 35. Every NHL team has played 4 to 7 games this season, so we're going to play a game of stay or nay. We'll also give you some lesser-known players who should be on your deep fantasy radar and catch up with Rob Higgins to talk some NHL rookie buzz. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to the second season, episode 35 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and subscribe to our iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show, and can support us at patreon.com/DPR show. I'm with my co-host, Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, how's it going? We're a couple weeks into the NHL season. CHL is on the fly, 10 to 12 games in for every team. How's the hockey season started for you?
Not so bad. Yeah, it's all in full gear right now. Every league across the world is playing real games. No more exhibition. We've got a couple games under our belt, so we actually have some stats to talk about, some hot starts and whatnot. And there's a lot to talk about. So let's get to it.
Yeah, I guess we haven't been on since the beginning of the season. We talked just before the start of the season. So, yeah, this will be our first in-season episode of the season. We're going to play a game of stay or nay, Peter. Are you ready to pick a stay or nay for probably a dozen players?
I totally am.
All right, we're going to start off with one that was probably the closest matchup in our Twitter poll that we did about a week ago. Prospect, stay or nay, will Sam Girard stay in the NHL or head back to the QMJHL? Samuel Girard, Nashville Predators, stay or nay?
I think a lot of my answers are going to be the same, because I'm under the philosophy and the impression that it's better to over-ripen than underdevelop a player. As good as Girard's been in the early part of the season, he's an undersized player. Right now, I think his mentality playing in the NHL as a 19-year-old is just, I got to survive. I got to try and stay here and prove that I can play here, and not make mistakes, not turn it over, not give up a goal. And I think that's the wrong mentality for a player of his style. I think he should go back to junior, and then I think he should play in the AHL as well, until it gets to the point where he's so overconfident that it's like, man, this kid is too good to not be in the NHL anymore. He has to play. And it's a small sample size, so some people might already be saying that, but it's a long season, and I just don't think that there's a rush. It's not like Nashville is destitute on the blue line. They've got some solid blue liners. He filled in really nice for an injury, but that player's back now. So, you know, it's been a nice cup of coffee for him in the NHL, a nice, you know, a little tease. Now I think it's time for him to go back to junior.
Yeah, Roman Josi was hurt, and he ended up coming back. And they have Ryan Ellis hurt as well, but I don't think that's going to affect him staying or going. I agree. I think he's going to head back to the Q. I don't think Nashville really rushes any defensemen. I can't really think. Ellis wasn't rushed. Josi wasn't rushed. Weber way back in the day maybe was rushed. But, yeah, they like to put their guys in the factory, let them develop, let them ripen real nice. And I think Samuel Girard is going to be a guy that is going to ripen into a very, very good defenseman for the Predators. Just I don't think they should rush him and maybe stunt his growth. So, I'm also going to say nay on that one. Next up, let's go with Kailer Yamamoto from the Edmonton Oilers. I think every fantasy hockey guy wants him to stay because the opportunity to play with McDavid. And if you took a steal at Yamamoto in your one-year leagues because you thought he was going to get with McDavid, wants him to stay. But I think a lot of scouts and NHL-minded players rather than the fantasy side want Yamamoto to go back because they don't want him to be affected by the long season. So I'm going to say nay to Yamamoto staying, and I hope he goes back to Spokane and just lights it up. What do you think, Peter?
Yeah, I agree. I think he should go back to junior. So this is a player that I saw him play live once. It was at the Top Prospect game in Quebec last year, and He was really impressive. He's a very impressive player. But after the game, there's a media session, and players were marched out in procession one after another, and they're in, like, you know, their socks and shorts and flip-flops, and they're, you know, their after-game sort of gym attire. But I was just there kind of observing and watching, and Yamamoto looks like he belongs in not even high school, but public school. He is a very young-looking guy, and he is very small. I don't know what his dimensions are, but I think it's around 5'10", 170, something like that off the top of my head. Whatever it is, I think it's an overstatement. I mean, the kid is small, small, small. And he's a kid. He's 18 years old. He was just drafted. So I think it would be a mistake for the Edmonton Oilers to rush and force him into the NHL. I like what they're doing with Puljujärvi. They're slow cooking him. I think they're going to do the same with Yamamoto. I think they're just giving him, you know, he had a good camp. He's impressive. He's an impressive player. And I think they're really excited for him, and they have high hopes for his future. So, you know, they're baiting him a little bit. They're going to give him, you know, a little bit of the taste of the pro life. And then that'll, you know, hopefully motivate him when they send him back to junior to hit the gym hard and drink some booster juice drinks or something, and maybe try to throw a few pounds on. But yeah, I say nay. Back to junior.
All right, so we agree with the first two. Let's move on to, you said Jesse Puljujärvi, and this guy got picked over top of Jesse Puljujärvi, and everybody went, what? Pierre-Luc Dubois, Blue Jackets, is he staying or is he going back to junior?
My guess is that Columbus will keep him, but I haven't had a chance to watch any Columbus games, so I'm only looking at the stat line. And for Dubois, it's not really impressive. If he's being underutilized or if he's not able to produce, then I would be inclined to send him back to junior. So I know our Twitter poll had him heavily favored as staying, but I'm going to go against the trend, and I'm going to say, dude, go back to junior.
Oh, wow. I actually think he's going to stay with the Blue Jackets. I think, yeah, he's playing third line minutes, so I think they're happy putting Pierre-Luc Dubois there. I think it'll affect his fantasy value quite a bit because he's stuck on that third line. And I don't think I want any part of him this year, but in long term, I think he will end up being a second line forward. But I think he stays for the entire year.
Yeah, he probably does, but I would send him back to junior.
All right, moving on to, let's go to a defenseman, Victor Mettay in Montreal. The London Knights are begging, they got to be begging the Montreal Canadiens for him back because they look god-awful in the O right now. Victor Mettay, do you think he stays or is he going to go help the London Knights?
I think he does stay. You know, he's playing not only in the NHL, but he's playing top pairing with Shea Weber, and he's looking pretty good doing it. I've watched a couple Montreal games, and you know, he looks confident. He's not a liability defensively, and right now the NHL is all about defensemen that can make quick plays with the puck, create transition, carry the puck up the ice, make a nice long stretch pass, and move from defense to offense. And that is precisely what Mete does. Skating is of utmost importance, and he is an excellent skater. I mean, this kid is very smooth. He's got great agility. His backward skating is great. His acceleration and mobility is exceptional. He's a little undersized, but that's okay because he's hard to track down and get a hold of. So I actually think Mate's going to stay.
I agree with you. I think Montreal is in desperate need of a well puck moving defenseman that is quick. I know Shea Weber can move the puck, but I think Mettay is that young spry kid that they need, that they kind of gave up on with PK Subban moving on out. So I think Victor Mettay is that replacement just a few years too late. So yeah, I'm going to say stay, but the London Knights, I swear they're begging the Montreal Canadiens to get him back. Let's go with Nolan Patrick. Do you think he stays? Is this an easy one? He's staying?
Yeah, I think so. I wouldn't say it's a slam dunk that he stays, but I would bet good money that he does. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't see any use of him going back to Brandon Wheat Kings whatsoever. I think let him learn in the NHL. He hasn't looked out of place. Another kid that just made his debut, Owen Tippett for the Florida Panthers. Do you think he stays or heads back to Mississauga?
I think he heads back to Mississauga, probably sooner rather than later. By the time people are listening to this, I would be surprised if he wasn't assigned back to junior. I mean, he hasn't played all season. They're holding him up in the press box, serving popcorn up there. What good is that? He played his first NHL game last night, and he looked great. He was really good, best player on the on the team last night. So that's wonderful, but. Is that the role that you want him to play in? Like, a healthy scratch, playing a few minutes a night? I don't think so. I think you want him to go back to junior and play a dominant role and try and lead his team to a championship or play for Team Canada at the World Juniors. So I would be surprised if he stays in the NHL.
Yeah, I'm going to say nay as well. I think Owen Tippett heading back to the Mississauga Steelheads, the Steelheads are in desperate need of him as well. They're struggling right now, and they're one of the favorites coming out of the O this year to go to the Mem Cup, and I think Owen Tippett is needed. They're also missing Mikey McLeod, so he might come back halfway through the year, and they might bolster their lineup to make a Mem Cup run. And if Owen Tippett gets in on that Mem Cup run, that is going to help him immensely. And the World Juniors, like you said, he's going to be a top guy that is looked upon for a lot of scoring for Team Canada. Let's move on to, well, we did have a Twitter poll for Alex Formanton, but we will update you. He has been sent back to London. His stay with the Ottawa Senators did not last long. It was nice to see, but he is back to the Knights. Logan Brown from the Senators, do you think he stays or heads back to Windsor?
I think he's going back to the O as well. He's just like Tippett. He's only played one game, didn't have any points. I'm not really sure what the Senators are playing at with keeping him with the team as long as they are. But again, I think it's just a matter of time until he gets sent back to junior.
I agree with you 100%. Let's go with Alex DeBrincat has kind of been on the brink of being sent to the AHL or playing NHL minutes. What do you think DeBrincat will do? Stay or nay?
So DeBrincat's a little different because he can go to the minors. He doesn't have to go to, he can't go to junior. Well, he could, but there's no way he's going to junior. So they can send him down to Rockford and bring him back up. He's waiver exempt, so they can move him up and down like yo-yo as often as they want. And look, my opinion is wherever he plays, it's got to be top six and first unit power play. And I know the coach really likes him, but it's not like Chicago doesn't have other options. So if it gets to the point where he's not playing 15 minutes a game or close to that and first unit power play, then he should be playing that in the AHL. So I'm gonna go with a split on this one. I think he splits the season between the two. I would be not surprised if he got sent down to the AHL and played 20 or 30 games. And then came back up eventually.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the same exercise. I think he's going to get sent down before his 9 games or his 10th game to try and keep his contract year intact. But I think they're going to call him up halfway through the year because he's just going to light up the AHL, and they're going to realize that, hey, maybe we should play this kid 15 to 18 minutes a game, not like we did at the beginning of the season. So I agree. I think he's going to split, but I think he will head back before his 10th game. Let's move on to Alex Tuch. He lit up the AHL at the beginning of the season for the Chicago Wolves, and he has 2 goals in 2 games for the Vegas Golden Knights. Stay or nay for Alex Tuch?
So out of all the players on the list, this one's the hardest for me because he's already got some AHL seasoning experience under his belt. He's looked good in the AHL. I'm not sure he has much left to prove, but then again, I'm not sure what Vegas's mandate is. Do they want to slow cook him and let him go back to the AHL and insulate him from what should be, it's not yet, but what should be through the course of the season, a losing environment in Vegas. So I think sending him back to the AHL would be probably best for his overall development and the long-term fortune of the team. But then again, Vegas is going to want to have that, you know, we got to get the fans something to be excited about. He's a player we can help market around, because, you know, the guys that they drafted are obviously not options this year. So the expansion draft didn't give them a lot to get excited about outside of Fleury and Neal. So, you know, Shipachev is another player that they can try and market and build a fan base around. So I'm kind of on the fence with Tuck. I think I'm going to go with Nay. And like to think that Vegas is going to do what's best for his long-term development. That's the impression I got, that their philosophy is coming out of the expansion draft, and especially the NHL entry draft, where they loaded up on draft picks. They loaded up on great players at the draft, and three first round picks was amazing. So I think it's clearly that's their plan is to build around their youth, not really worry about this year, and I guess hope that the novelty of having an NHL team in the city will be enough to sustain for the first couple years, and they'll do right by other players. So I'll say Nay.
I'm going to say stay, because he's showing chemistry with the Shipachev. Like you said, he could be a guy they market, and having chemistry with one of the top flight guys is going to help him stay for the entire year. And he's showed it in his first two games. He was coming off of absolutely no rest. He traveled in the morning, and his first game, he had barely any sleep. He showed up to the rink and was like, "I'm ready to go, coach, put me in." And they put him in, and he showed a ton of energy. Like, I thought he was going to have a sluggish game, and I was really worried that his debut in Vegas would be, because he was coming off of travel time and no rest and playing the night before in Chicago. But he looked tremendous, and I think if he sticks with Shipachev, he's going to have a pretty decent year. I'm not saying he's going to be a 45 or 40 point guy, but he could maybe hit 30 if he sticks with Shipachev. So I'm going to say stay for Alex Tuck.
Yeah, he was a tough one. I'll stay with the Nay. You go with the stay, and that'll be fun to track all season. But that was a really tough one.
All right, let's go with the one that we had a tough time with last year. Well, we're going to do it again this year. Mikhail Sergachev, are you saying he stays, or is he Nay headed to who knows where? This is an interesting one. What do you think with Sergachev?
I think he's going to stay. I don't think he's got too high of quality of competition to make the Tampa roster. I think he'll stay, and he'll be played in a semi-insulated role. I think it's also good asset management by Tampa Bay to do that, because he's made it quite clear that he's not going to go to junior. I think having him go to Europe is just an unnecessary risk. You know, the whole Russian factor and whatnot, that he might get kind of comfortable over there and not want to come back. I think it's a really remote small chance that if they send him back, that comes back to haunt them. But look at the pros and the cons, and the pros of playing in Europe. I don't know if he's playing pro hockey in Europe, if he'll learn much more over there than he will by playing in the NHL. I mean, he doesn't have access to better coaches anywhere than in the NHL. And he's got a guy like Victor Hedman that he can model his game after. And so I think he stays.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he stays. And the question mark of where they would send him is probably going to help him stay the entire year, because yeah, I don't think they want him to go back to the KHL. I don't think there's any worry about him staying in the KHL, because he came to the O at a very young age and learned English and really transitioned from a Russian to pretty much be a Canadian, and he wanted to be playing in Canada and wanted to be playing in North America. So I think he's showing that he wants to stay here. So I think if he was sent back or sent down and he chose to go to the KHL, I think it would be a one-year. He'd be in Tampa Bay the very next year. But I think he stays, just the same fact you said, the coaching, the being under Hedman's wing, learning. He's going to be insulated big time. he's not going to need to play the top minutes or power play because of Hedman, and they go with their four forward, one defense in Tampa Bay. They've looked fantastic to begin the season, and he has a really good goalie in behind him that is going to shelter him as well in Andrei Vasilevsky. So I think Sergachev is a stay this year.
I got one more for you, Paul, that we didn't talk about in advance. Catch you off guard.
Fire it off. Let's go.
It's one of your Vegas Golden Knights boys. Oh, boy. Leipzig, stay or nay?
Oh, he's staying. I think he's staying. And again, he played with Tuck and Shapachov when they had their debut. And I think Leipzig stays the entire year. He's got a lot of energy, and he's not going to be a big fantasy value guy this year because there's not going to be a ton of scoring in Vegas. I think what they've done so far this year has been impressive. I don't think it's going to continue this way. I think they will fall off eventually, and they're going to go through some hard times. And a team that doesn't have a lot of chemistry and hasn't played a lot together and interesting leadership, I think they're going to have a tough time when they do come into a three-game losing streak, four-game losing streak, being on the road. They haven't really been on the road for a long time yet, so that might build chemistry when they do get on the road. But I know George McPhee came out and said that the team is having a tough time being at home and not being out on the road because they're not building that team morale. So I think Leipzig's going to stick around the entire year.
Yeah, me too. He's not waiver exempt, so if they tried to send him to the AHL, he'd have to go through waivers, and I don't think they want to expose him to that. He was dominant for the Marlies when he played there. He was like their best offensive player. He's an excellent distributor of the puck. He's led the CHL in scoring in his final year of junior, so he's got great offensive upside. I think he stays too, and like you said, he might not be a fantasy impact player this year, but I wouldn't rule out the possibility that in a year or two, once he gets kind of comfortable in the NHL and carves out his niche with Vegas, that some, you know, Maple Leaf fans might be thinking, oh, man, I wish we hadn't lost him in the expansion draft. Not to say that he's going to like lead the league or even the team in scoring, but he could very well become a relevant player.
All right, Peter, we're going to put out a couple more Twitter polls of some of the guys we went over tonight and some of the newer guys that we haven't had a Twitter poll out yet. So there may be a duplicate Twitter poll that you see, but we're gonna see what the public thinks. And I think the number one that we come out with is Alex Tuck. I think that's the one to watch, the stay or nay that we're kind of opposite on. You were kind of on the fence, but I think that's the one we're going to go with. Alex Tuck is going to be our rival this year, what happens with Alex Tuck.
I like it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to break down some lesser-known players that might be on your deep fantasy radar or should be on your deep fantasy radar. All right, Peter, it's time to talk about some lesser-known players. You did a deep dive research for Prospect Ramblings on Monday, and I would like to get your opinion and a little more in-depth maybe on some of the guys you wrote about and maybe some guys you left off because you didn't have time to fill a 3,000-word article. So let's use the podcast to elaborate on some of your writing. Let's start with the Owen Sound attack defenseman, Sean Durzi.
Yeah, okay. So I've been doing a little bit of research in the last week. All the leagues are in full swing now, and in our CHL fantasy pool we have for our patron members, I had to replace some of my D just in case guys like Gerard and Mete don't come back to junior. So I was looking at the O, and it was impossible not to notice Sean Durzi. He's a Owen Sound attack defenseman. So I was curious if all the points that he's got, which is, you know, he's played 9 games, he's got 4 goals and 17 points in 9 games, and he's a plus 12. So that's outstanding. You know, it's early. But is that because he's playing on a team with guys like Nick Suzuki and Gadjevich? So I did a little research on him. I don't know him that well. I haven't noticed him in any of my live games per se. But all the comments that I saw from guys like Brock Otten in his scouting reports for him said that, you know, he's a little bit undersized. He went undrafted last year. He's got a late birthday. So, you know, but he skates really well. He's short, but not a small player. He's got good strength. He does everything well, but nothing exceptionally, was kind of the gist of the comments I got from the research that I looked at. Dominic Tiano is another writer that had a scouting report on him that I read. So I put him on my fantasy team, put my money where my mouth is, and signed him up, and he's on my roster now. So hopefully it's sustainable, and I'm not a fool. And you know, so thinking about him for you know, regular NHL rosters, he's not drafted and he's not signed a contract, so I can't add him in any of my leagues. But he's certainly a player who I want to give a little radar love to. Put him on my watch list maybe, and kind of like what we did last year with Darren Radish, in that, you know, he was an unsigned, undrafted player who had an outstanding season offensively for Erie in the OHL, and you know, he still hasn't signed an NHL contract yet, but he's signed in the AHL with Chicago, so we're still keeping tabs on him. But so Sean Durzi is a player I think that at this point should be on your radar if you're in deep leagues like the ones that we're talking about.
All right, and you had to replace a defenseman. So who did you take out of your fantasy hockey DPRFL team?
Mete.
All right, because you said he was staying, so that you're backing yourself up in two ways, saying Mete is staying and Durzi's a guy that is fantasy relevant. Let's move on to college. College has gotten going. We haven't really talked about any college kids yet because they've only been in season 3 to 5 games. Leading scorer Colton Conrad. Give us a little more information about Conrad.
Yeah. So, Kevin LeBlanc he's our Canes writer. He also does our NCAA roundup, and his first article came out last week. It's a great article. It's really hard to get college games up here in Canada. TSN broadcasts a few. There's some channels that you might be able to subscribe to that broadcast some college games, but you have to pay a little extra for those. So it is a challenge to watch college hockey on TV in Canada. So some of these guys I've never had a chance to see it. Colton Conrad is one of them, but doing a little research on him, he is a undrafted free agent. He's 20 years old. He's in his third year at Western Michigan University. He's having a bit of a breakout season. He's 5 games in. He's got 3 goals and 6 assists for 9 points. He's a little undersized, 5'10", 187. This is a player that at 20 years old, with 3 years under his belt at college at the end of the year, if he can keep up this scoring pace, I would be surprised if he doesn't garner some attention from NHL general managers and maybe sign a contract. So someone to keep an eye on for the end of the season when the college year ends. Some teams might try and sign him up, and at which point, you, depending on your league rules, you might be able to snap him as a really good value free agent.
Yeah, and in our Patreon, we put up a top 5 for pretty much every prospect league, the CHL leagues, the KHL, the Liga, the SHL. We're also doing an NCAA. You have to sign up $5 a month to be able to see those top 5s, and I think Colton Conrad's going to be put up somewhere on that top 5. So if you want to see our top 5s, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/DPRshow, and you can get a top 5. We have not put out our NCAA. It's the only league we're missing. We have all the other leagues up already, as well as a Calder top 5 that we do monthly. Let's stick with the college and go with Zach Solow or Solo.
Yep. All right. So this is a player that passed through the draft last year. He's 18 years old. He's another late birthday guy. He played in the USHL last year in his draft year. 56 games, 69 points. So, very good point total. Again, he's a little bit on the small size, 5'9", 181, and he's playing at Northeastern University. So as a freshman at Northeastern, he's 3 games in, he's got a goal a game, plus 4 assists, so 7 points in 3 games so far. So that is pretty impressive. I'm really hoping to be able to watch a Northeastern game this season. He's got a teammate there that would be 2-for-1 scout shopping, Dylan Sakura. He's a Chicago Blackhawks prospect. He was drafted in the sixth round, 178th overall in 2014. He's only 5% Fantrax owned, so there's a really good chance you can sign him up in your fantasy pool for free. He's one of Chicago's fastest rising prospects. He's 22 years old. He's in his last year of college hockey. Last year in 38 games, he had a breakout season, 21 goals, 57 points. This year as a senior in three games, he's also got 7 points, 3 goals, 4 assists. So there is, I suppose, the possibility that he doesn't sign at the end of the season and hits the free agent market. But I'm not sure why he would want to not play for the Chicago Blackhawks and their organization. All they do is win Stanley Cups. And the Hawks also recently signed his brother. So that's a good leverage maneuver in contract negotiations. I'm sure there might be some wink, wink, nudge, nudge, handshake, backroom kind of agreements with, we'll sign your brother a contract if you swear you'll sign with us after this season. So anyways, at the end of the year, look for Dylan Sakura to turn pro and maybe get a cup of coffee in the NHL. Or, you know, his college is over one way or the other. So at the very least, he'll finish out the season in the AHL.
Yeah, he's on my list of NCAA guys that I definitely want to find a way of watching their games. And I'm going to put Zach Solo on that list now, too, since it'll be a two-for-one look. Let's move to the AHL. You talked about some kids turning pro next year. Dylan Sakura is one of those guys. Let's talk about Warren Fogle, your guy. The guy you like to you pump his tires every other episode, every third episode of our podcast. So Warren Fogle, let's keep pumping his tires and try and get his fantasy stock up even higher.
I don't understand. He's only 4% owned. Doesn't everyone listen to the podcast?
Yeah, anyway, that should be much higher. 4% is far too low for Fogle.
I've said it all before. You know, he was dominant in the junior hockey last year. He won the playoff MVP with Erie en route to a Memorial Cup. So this year he's 21 years old. He's played 4 games. He's got 4 goals. He doesn't have an assist yet. But he was named the AHL Player of the Week in the second week of their season. A small sample size, but you know, still for a 21-year-old rookie. And he played his overage season in junior last year, so he's a little bit older than the rest of the freshman class of guys graduating from junior and turning pro in the AHL. So he's got a year up on those guys. He's got size. He's 6'2", 190. You know, I wouldn't rule out the possibility that he plays some time in the NHL this season, maybe even a decent amount of time. No rush to get him there. Of course, Carolina's doing just fine right now without him, and he's doing just fine in the AHL, cutting his teeth at the pro level. But he's a really versatile player. He may not play in the top six in the AHL or NHL. I'd be surprised if he did, in fact. But you know, he's clearly got offensive upside. Coach is going to love him because he can, you know, he can take draws. He's good on the wing. He's good defensively. He's got great speed. Creates himself a lot of breakaway opportunities. He's dangerous, shorthanded. He's got good size, and Carolina could use size. Frankly, I'd be shocked if this is a player that doesn't make it to the NHL and contributes in a wide variety of statistical categories in your fantasy league, like, you know, faceoffs from the wing, dual positional eligibility, hits, block shots, assists, power play, shorthanded points. You name it, he can do it.
All right, I think that you've pumped his tires even more. So that 4% is going to like 5 or 6 now. Come on, listeners, get that ownership up. We want to know that you're listening and are on our side. Another rookie in the AHL that's making some heads turn, Matthew Highmore for the Rockford IceHogs, a Blackhawks prospect. What do you think of Matthew Highmore at the beginning of this year?
Yeah, he's another player that I'm pretty high on. I've been pumping his tires too, and it's nice to see his play backing up my high praise. I picked him in my fantasy leagues. He's signed as a free agent. He's undrafted. He's also 21. I believe he played his overage season last year with was with St. John's, 64 games, 89 points. He's a bit of another kind of similar to Fogle. He'll get you all kinds of, you know, stats, 46 penalty minutes, plus 34. He throws some hits. In the AHL this season as a 21-year-old rookie, he's got, in three games, he's got 3 goals and 2 assists. So he's got 5 points in 3 games. So that's a really good first impression. And, you know, if he can keep that up, I wouldn't rule out, he's 21 years old as well. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of him getting a sniff with Chicago Blackhawks at some point this season too.
All right, and sticking to AHL rookies, let's go with Sammy Niku. Give us a little more in-depth look at Sammy Niku.
Yep, he's a 6-foot defenseman coming from Finland. He's playing for, drafted by the Winnipeg Jets. He's a great value pick by the Jets in the 7th round, 198th overall. He's a great value pick for you because he's only 2% Fantrax owned, same as Highmore. He's 21 years old. He played in pro hockey last year in Liga, 59 games, 27 points. He's come over to North America this year. He said he's going to play regardless of where they assign him, but in the prospect tournament and rookie camp and, well, maybe not prospect tournament, the rookie camp and preseason, he surpassed players on their depth chart, like Tucker Poolman and Logan Stanley. He's a real standout player in those tournaments, and he hasn't disappointed in the AHL so far. He's got 4 assists, no goals yet, but 4 assists in 4 games. He's got decent size too, 6'1", 176. So, you know, we talked about how the Jets are a good prospect team, but maybe a little thin positionally on defense. So that bodes well for your fantasy ownership of Sammy Niku because it means he doesn't have a lot of competition standing in his way. He moves the puck up the ice really well. He makes good decisions and good transition hockey. And he's not really undersized anymore, today's standards, at 6'1", 176. So, yeah, 2%. I think this is a low-risk, high-reward player you could roll the dice on in your fantasy league and, you know, stash him in your prospect bench for now. But maybe next year this is a player you could be looking at getting really good value, especially in a cap league because, you know, he's on his ELC, so it'll be nice and cheap.
All right, and another guy that's only played one game in the AHL so far, he was in the ECHL last year. Gage Quinney, part of the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. What do you like about Gage Quinney in that one game?
Well, he had 3 points, so that's pretty impressive. You know, sorting the AHL scoring by points per game, he jumped right up to the top. I was like, who the heck is Gage Quinney? So he played junior hockey in the Dub. His final season, he played mainly with Kamloops, 53 games, 57 points, just over a point a game player in his last year, junior, undrafted, unsigned. Last year he was invited to the Pittsburgh Penguins prospect camp as an invitee, and he really impressed them, so they signed him to their ECHL team, where he played last year in 45 games. He had 44 points, and they invited him to their training camp again this year. And he played in some preseason games. He scored some goals. He turned some heads. He looked really impressive. And made his AHL debut on the weekend, I believe it was. He played against Syracuse. They made Zach Aston Reese, a player we've talked about on the podcast a couple times. He made Aston Reese a healthy scratch. So we're always talking about who's the next Pittsburgh Penguin prospect. Who's the next Jake Guentzel? That's going to, or Connor Sheary or Brian Rust, this guy's going to come out of nowhere and make it to the NHL and play with Sidney Crosby, and everyone's going to like clamor over to get in their fantasy waiver wire and whatnot. Who knows? Maybe it's this Gage Quinney kid. He's 22, 5'11", 201. So, you know, he's short, but not small. He can play center or the wing. Doesn't have an NHL contract yet. He's only on an AHL contract. And as I said, he's never drafted. So I can't add him in any of my leagues, and most people probably can't either. But he's a player I think you want to keep close tabs on. See how he does in the AHL over the next couple weeks. If he can keep up even close to a 3-point-a-game scoring pace, Then I would be surprised if it's not too long before he ends up converting that AHL contract into an NHL one. And I'm not sure how many NHL contracts Pittsburgh Penguins have. If they're at the 50 max, then that would make things complicated. But you know, he's a player that the organization is really keen on, and they're interested in, and I think they're gonna, you know, continue to give him opportunities to play his way on into the NHL.
All right, Peter. Yeah, then that's what this segment was for picking out, finding guys that are in deep leagues that you may not be able to get yet, but you should put on your own watch list or make a note of it in your team notes of some sort to have Gage Quinney just to keep an eye on and maybe keep tabs on if he does get that NHL contract to stash him away. We had a question the other day, Tyler Steenbergen. In the Swift Current Broncos, Arizona prospect, 25 points in 9 games, 16 goals, 9 assists. This kid's just lighting it up. Do you think this is for real, or is it a mirage?
I think it's for real, and he's an undersized player, and he went undrafted in his initial draft year because he's, you know, he's a small guy, and his offensive stats were, you know, okay but not great. And then in his draft plus 1 year, he had an explosion of like 90 points is what he posted last year. He's only 5'10", 187, and he's carrying that through this year. He's dominating the dub, like you said, playing with Florida prospect Heppelniemi. But he was drafted in his draft plus 1 year. I think it was in the third or fourth round by Arizona. So, you know, just what Arizona needs, another offensive dynamic prospect. You know, he's looking like he could be the real deal. And the fact that he's 5'10", 187 anymore, it doesn't mean that he can't play. So I haven't had a chance to watch him play a lot. So I'm not off the top of my head confident what his skating is like, but that's going to be key. If he's got, you know, acceleration and agility that, you know, he can evade the big hits at the pro level, and he can keep up with the pace of the play, both physically and with his hockey sense. And you know, looking at his stat line, 25 points in 9 games, you know, yeah, it's in junior, but you know, that would lead me to believe that he can keep up with the pace at the higher level. So the question we had was, is he the real deal, and should I drop him or add him and drop a player like Ryan Gropp or Emile Poirier? My answer was, you know, I don't have a lot of confidence in Emile Poirier anymore. I'd go so far as to throw the bust label on that file. You know, he hasn't had a chance to establish himself in the AHL or in the NHL yet. He's, you know, he's had a few years in the A now and a couple opportunities to crack the NHL roster, and it doesn't look like he's really that close. And Steenbergen slide and to be determined on this file. So I would absolutely make room for him at the expense of a prospect that I'm kind of losing faith in.
Yeah, and if you were a Patreon of ours, a first rounder, you would have saw that Steenberger made our top 5 in the WHL. So if you want to get top 5s of the CHL leagues, the NCAA, the KHL, Steenbergen's one of those guys that kind of came out of nowhere and is in our top 5 with some pretty elite names. So yeah, you should sign up to our Patreon and get those top 5s and get a load of other information as well. We are also posting public standings to the DPRFL, the first CHL fantasy hockey league. Peter and I kind of spearheaded this, and we were quite happy that we had at least some teams come out and participate, and we've gotten through our trade deadlines. And yeah, you can see the standings up on our patreon.com/DPRshow and follow along and see where Peter and I rank against some of our listeners. So check that out. When we come back, we're going to catch up with Rob Higgins and find out what HFI is and some of his vocabulary that he uses, like foxy by proxy.
How can it be? I mean, I have my doubts. Every move I make leads back to your house. I tried to leave, but
right, you're listening to Dogger Prospects Radio. We're back with our interview segment right now, and I'm really excited to welcome our guest tonight. It is none other than Rob Higgins, the author of Hockey Fantasy Index and co-host of the fantasy show on SiriusXM on Fridays. Rob, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, it's my pleasure, guys. Thanks for inviting me. It's good to be here.
So let's jump right in to your book. We were just talking before we were recording about your book, and I told you how excited I was when I found it. It came out about 7 years ago. And like you said, there wasn't really anything out there like it. And I got through about the first page and a half, and I was like running to the checkout to buy it. First of all, let's talk about your HFI index. Can you describe to us what that is?
Yeah, sure. A bunch of years ago, I was running a fantasy hockey league, and I was also participating in my uncle's baseball league, which was at the time obviously much more complicated than the hockey league I was participating in. So I was inspired to turn our hockey league into a much more progressive model. And so we did just that. And when I was trying to win that league, I got frustrated by the lack of fantasy hockey content out there. And I wished that there was some sort of statistic that spoke to fantasy value. There were so many statistics attached to hockey, but none of them really spoke to real fantasy value, because I now had this complicated league with all kinds of stats as part of the mix, which is kind of standard now, but at the time it wasn't. And so I just created my own statistic, and it was HFI. It was basically a Higgins Fantasy Index, a Hockey Fantasy Index. At the time, I really wasn't sure what the H was going to stand for. But basically, it was just an index, and it was a single statistic that spoke to fantasy value, and it was a rate-based measure. So it was like a per-game measure of the player's value, and it took most of the statistics into consideration, minus penalty minutes, just because it's been a pet peeve of mine forever. I don't like it as part of my league, so I didn't make it part of my statistic. And to this day, I've never made it part of HFI, but it does weigh all kinds of stats from the stats pack. Basically, attached a formula to it that I refined over the first few years, and then I found a formula that seemed to work. It applied well to head-to-head. It applied well to points-based. And I went on a run of about 7 years of victory in my keeper league, which was a pretty high-end league, guys with pretty good depth of knowledge. And it was something that employed cap hits as well. So a complicated league, difficult to win, and this single number, this index, seemed to really give me an advantage, just because there was so little out there in the fantasy world at the time in terms of that type of coverage. So it became the subject of our radio show at SiriusXM. It became the subject of a book that Simon & Schuster wanted to do with me, something that they caught wind of through the radio show, and because there was a void in that market, they jumped at the opportunity to put a book together based on the statistic on the index. So we did exactly that. It became a bestseller in Canada, did fairly well out of the gate, and then sort of hit the ceiling with the fantasy market being what it was at the time, despite the growth that was going on. And then that statistic and the index became part of a TV show and a newspaper column for the Toronto Sun. So this thing that I was just sort of tracking to win my fantasy league became a thing, I guess, that in the end ended up earning me some income and some opportunities to learn some stuff and to work with some interesting folks. So in a long-winded nutshell, that's the story behind that.
Yeah, cool. One of the things I like about it is, as you said, it encompasses a whole bunch of stats, and it kind of raises the value of some of the the players that aren't in the top six and on the highlight reel every night, but they're the guys that do a lot of the gritty and the dirty work and are good defensively. And one of the points in your book is that those guys will get ice time from their coach. And while they may not have the most skill set on the team, they may get the most minutes. And that'll ultimately translate into your fantasy pool. So there's all kinds of little important gems like that in your book. And you've got your whole own little vocabulary in here. And there's a bunch of terms that I just kind of wanted to go through. And maybe you could just kind of explain what the term means and like how it translates into everyone's daily fantasy league. How's that sound?
Sure. Fire away.
All right. Foxy by proxy, one of my faves.
Foxy by proxy. All right. Well, my co-host on SiriusXM, Boomer Gordon, this is probably his favorite one because, as you know, the league has gone to a three-line league now, and you're going to find a ton of wingers out there these days because you've got three scoring lines going. And so on every line, there's a guy that they count on to do some of the heavy lifting while you've got two skill guys. So in Toronto, you've got Matthews and Nylander playing together, and they're amazing, but you've got a guy like Hyman on their line that is more of a worker, and so we would consider Hyman the foxy by proxy player on that line. It's a guy that on his own, on some other line, or if he's not playing with such skilled players, he's probably not going to be all that fantasy relevant, but because he's playing with those guys, he becomes quote-unquote foxy by proxy, and some nights you may consider him a bona fide option, maybe if he has a four-game week or if he has a good matchup on a DFS situation night to night. So he's not a guy that you would build your team around. He wouldn't be part of your core. He might not even stay with your team all that long over the course of a season, but he would be an option that you would consider because of his assignment, essentially.
All right, and two more categories you have, durability and reliability. I think a lot of people get those kind of confused and blend them together. How do you define the differences between a player's durability and reliability?
That's a good question. Well, I guess what comes to mind is Evgeny Malkin, because he's both. He has durability issues, but he's also reliable. I mean, you know he's a beast. You know that if he's healthy and playing, he's going to point for you in a first or second round sort of way in terms of return. But he's also got durability issues. It's pretty established that you can count on him missing 10 to 15 games or whatever it's going to be pretty much every season now. So in the book, in the context of the book, what I was talking about was with every player that you're looking at, and we look at, you know, top 10 rankings, top 20 rankings, how the first round should go, the first three picks. I like to look at all those things. The stats, I like to consider the eye test and watching the player. And I need to consider intangibles like durability and reliability because they matter as where in terms of where I'm going to rank a player and how I'm going to go about doing my draft. I just can't put a guy like Malkin ahead of other players that I know don't have a history of games missed because of injury. Stamkos, I had to look at that file this year going into my draft and say, I love Stamkos. I think he's probably going to be a first rounder in terms of value and return this year. And I think if I was to, you know, be brave and really put my ass on the line in terms of a prediction, I would say that he's probably a top eight guy this year. But because of the durability issue and the situation with his injuries, I just can't consider him a bona fide first round pick for my fantasy team because I need somewhat of a home run with that first round pick, and I want to minimize as much risk as I can. So, yeah, durability and reliability are huge considerations, and reliability is more tied to the character thing. Can I trust this guy? if healthy, to deliver? Or is he going to give me a Vaclav Prospal sort of treatment where every other year I'm going to get a good per-game return from the player? But so reliability is different. It's not the same as durability. That's for sure. It's a different consideration, but equally as important.
Okay. And you have almost an entire chapter devoted towards value, and you have like 7 points to consider when talking about value. I don't want to get into, you know, each point bullet by bullet with you, but maybe you can just give me a quick, and the listener, a quick overview of like, what are some important things to think about when you're doing, when you're valuing players? Like, are you talking like tiers and or points and stats? How does your average Joe fantasy guy incorporate your thoughts on value?
Right. Well, I guess this year I could think of, you know, off the top of my head, an example like Nikita Kucherov versus Jack Eichel. Both of them are going to provide good value because they're beasts. And it seems to be going into this season that their value is still a bit, their perceived value is still a bit low. So I saw a lot of people that are quote-unquote fantasy experts ranking Kucherov around 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I saw some people had him as low as like 10 or 11 in their preseason rankings. And so to me, that presents tremendous value because I would take him, I don't know if you heard our season preview, but I had him ranked second. And so, you know, when the perceived value is low, that's an opportunity for me to cash in on his actual value. So value is, you know, it has so much to do with the market, basically, when it comes to that asset. How do people view it? What's the value the public are attaching to this asset? And what's the value I'm attaching to it? And what's the difference? Jack Eichel, I've been saying this for months, well before last season ended, that he was going to be one of the biggest movers this year. And that feeling was shared by a lot of people. So his value diminished over the course of the summer because you saw him sort of move up rankings. And then by the time the season actually started, so many people were talking about Jack Eichel being a great play this year and a guy who's probably going to be a prime mover. His sort of value diminished because his perceived value came up. And then it came close to matching his actual value. So there was less value. He became less of a value pick once drafts got rolling. So off the top of my head, I mean, that would be, I guess, a good way for me to express what I meant by value. And I guess another example that comes to mind is Jake Guentzel. He did a ton in the playoffs last year, and he did a great job in the regular season before that. And so because in hockey, for some reason, when it comes to fantasy hockey, we're a little slow to react, and we forget pretty quickly how effective someone had been. It seems, well, in some cases, that's not the case. I mean, Charlie McAvoy, everybody needed to have him at their draft based on what he did in the playoffs. But Guentzel, it seems, wasn't taken as seriously. You know, I saw him as low as like 50th, 60th. But that's another situation where he provided great value because if you viewed him as a top-line winger, as a guy that, you know, playing with Sidney Crosby, based on where he was ranked, that's tremendous value. You can get him third or fourth round and know that he's going to produce potentially like a second rounder.
There's a little Foxy by proxy in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's about as Foxy by proxy as it gets. You're playing with Sidney Crosby, he's not the greatest of pure talents, but clearly he's got a great hockey IQ. And the word that we were getting down at the studio was that a player that Sid very much wanted to play with. Let's just say that.
That helps. All right, one more term in your book. Kids are all right, and I'll read a little quote what you said about that in your book. You say, knowing which first-year players have the potential to actually deliver value in year one is of vital importance. This is especially so in keeper leagues with rookie components, but even in one-off, season-long, head-to-head, or points-driven leagues, rookies can be a cheap source of fuel if their team provide them with the right context. So with that little theory in mind, Paul's going to hit you up with a bunch of players who are rookies in the NHL right now, and maybe we can talk about are these guys value players right out of the gate as rookies in year one?
I got to start right off the top with the Calder race. Will Butcher, 9 points in six games played, all assists and five power play points. Is Will Butcher going to even keep up maybe half this pace? He's at 1.5 points per game. Is he going to be a point per game guy, or maybe 3/4 of a point per game?
Well, it's hard for me to believe that Butcher would be a point per game defenseman this season. It's a great start, but really we're talking about him cashing in mostly on power play assists. He's got, I think, 6 games played, 9 points, and most of it coming on the power play. What's kind of worrisome, he's not getting a ton of pucks on net. He's got 4 shots on goal in those games, so a lot of his value is coming from the assist department. And so when I look at a player like Brock Besser, a guy who generates more on his own and isn't really cashing in on other people burying as much, it's hard for me to think that Butcher will sort of maintain that dominance. And I think if we're talking about Calder consideration, I think Butcher, stands a good chance of staying in that conversation based on how well New Jersey's playing. But I think, and I will say this, in terms of rookie HFIs, Butcher's got the second best one that I've tracked in the NHL, and Besser's got the best one. And they're both at a 2.9, so they're neck and neck, but Besser's at a higher 2.9 than Butcher. I just have more faith in Besser maintaining that kind of pace than I would Butcher. I think New Jersey's going to come back to a little bit, not a lot. There's ton of speed there and some real game in their top nine, but I wouldn't lean towards Butcher in terms of the Calder, but I think you're looking at a legitimate 40 or 50 point season from that defenseman.
That would be excellent. And Besser being scratched the first couple games from Vancouver was not a very nice picture to begin the season, but now that he's playing and he's rolling with 4 points in 3 games played, so yeah, he's getting hot real quick. You mentioned Charlie McAvoy earlier, and Boston's got a ton of Bruins rookies in the rookie scoring race, the top 25. I think they got 5 in their list. Charlie McAvoy, you mentioned, he's 92% owned in Fantrax, the highest owned rookie in the league. What do you think of Charlie McAvoy, and can he keep up this 4 points in 5-game pace?
Well, the challenge there is just the assignment. He's not going to get a lot of the first PP looks because Krug's getting that kind of action. But as far as, a guy with his 5-on-5 assignments and second power play looks, you're going to see a moderate return. This was a sexy play coming out of the gate. So at everyone's draft, everyone needed to have Charlie McAvoy, but for me, the value was while Krug was hurt, while he was out of the lineup. And what seemed to derail that potential was Bergeron being hurt and not being in the lineup. So Boston, to me, their season didn't start until Bergeron got into the mix, because without him there, their look down the middle is just not good enough. So it clearly affected them once the season started. And I do like Boston. I do like them this year. I think they were sort of underappreciated when people were doing their previews. But it requires a healthy Bergeron in the lineup because they don't have a ton up the middle. What is encouraging is that they do have a good collection of kids that can get into the lineup and make a difference in Bjork, in DeBrusk, and McAvoy. Just having at least like those three being able to play serious minutes and contribute, I mean, that's a big deal. And McAvoy, you know, like I said, playing that second power play unit, I think he's getting looks on the first pair with Chara now. So that's a pretty great assignment, 5-on-5. And what he's been doing on a per-game basis, on par with Giordano, Forsling, Manson, Bufflin. So statistically speaking, the returns early are good. This kind of pace over the course of 82, I just don't know that that'll be there given his assignment. But if he is to crack that first power play unit, then I think that would be more realistic. But still, I think you're going to have a good season for McAvoy.
All right, and another guy that's been playing with pretty fantastic line mates, Jacob Vrana in Washington for the Capitals. 5 points in 7 games played, 2 goals, 3 assists. Is Vrana going to stay up in that top six and have an excellent line mate pretty much the entire year?
That is a good question. I guess I would say based on the sort of lack of depth in Washington, generally speaking, with the forward group, I don't love their bottom six. I think the chances that are pretty good. I wouldn't say it's in stone that he stays on that line, but and it's a little disappointing that the other two guys have been so good, statistically speaking, and he really hasn't cashed in the way you'd think a line mate would. But again, he doesn't get really some of the prime looks in all situations that you want from an elite pointer. So I guess I would say based on what we've seen so far, the chances of him sticking are pretty good, but I am a little shocked that he hasn't pointed better given how amazingly hot his line mates have been, statistically speaking.
Okay. Pretty much these guys are going to be head-to-head their entire careers, Nico Hischier and Nolan Patrick. We've seen them play 6 professional games. Who do you think comes out on top this year, points-wise?
This year? Well, I'm sort of liking the looks that Hischier's getting right now. Zacha had every opportunity to run with that, and he just didn't get the job done. So Hischier, now you're talking about a number one center on a New Jersey team that's learned to score and play an up-tempo brand of hockey. So despite Philadelphia being awesome and having an amazing first line right now and some real depth and great players on the blue line to augment that situation there, I would have to go with the kid in New Jersey. I'm not a huge Taylor Hall fan. I still think that top nine in New Jersey has a lot to prove over the course of 82, but if I had to hazard a guess, I'll go with Hischier.
All right, perfect. In our first segment, we played a little game of stay or nay. I'm going to rapid fire a couple of names off and decide. You can decide if they're going to stay past their 9-game tryout or if they're going to be headed back to junior. Samuel Girard in Nashville, do you think he'll stay past the 9 games?
Ooh, that is a tough one. I mean, Yossi's back, so you'd think he might not stick. But he showed pretty well. Man, that's a tough call. I'll say he goes back.
All right, so that'd be a nay. Moving on to Victor Mete in Montreal. Is he staying or is he headed back to the London Knights?
I'd say he stays. There's such little positivity going on there. I would think maybe he gets dealt, but again, that's pure speculation, so I have really nothing to base that on aside from what I've seen. I'll say stay.
All right. This one, I think all the fantasy hockey players want him to stay, but I think a lot of hockey minds want him to head back to junior. Kaylor Yamamoto in Edmonton. Do you think he's staying for the year, or is he headed back to Spokane?
Well, this Drysdale situation is interesting. I think as long as he's out of the lineup, they're going to need that kind of skill because there's not enough happening right now. And so I'm going to say stay.
All right, and one last one. Owen Tippett for Florida made his debut last night, and his coach came out and said he was the best Florida Panther on the ice. I don't know if that's saying a lot about Owen Tippett or a lot about the Panthers in general. Owen Tippett, is he staying or is he going back to the Mississauga Steelheads?
Look, I'm going to be frank with you. I am not a Redeem for Bata fan. I didn't even like the acquisition, to be honest with you. So he's not going anywhere. I say he stays. If he plays his cards right, he can get himself up into that top six. It's not like Dadonoff ran away with things, and Verbata, I think he leaves a lot to be desired when we're talking about the character component, the consistency aspect of his game. So I'll say stay.
Stay for Owen Tippett. Those are some bold calls, but that's why we play the game. Rob, thanks so much for coming on. For anyone who enjoyed listening to Rob talk some fantasy hockey, you should subscribe to Sirius XM and listen to him and Boomer every Fridays at what time are you on Fridays? Noon? Two?
We're on at 1 p.m. Eastern every Friday.
1 o'clock. And you can follow him on Twitter at Robert M. Higgins, or you can follow his band, Dearly Beloved. At The Beloveds. Do you have any shows coming up soon where people can go and catch you live?
Yeah, actually, we're playing in Toronto at the Mod Club November 10th. Pretty stoked about that. We just got back from Japan. We did a 9-date tour there and a couple of shows in Seoul, South Korea. And so we're chilling in Toronto right now, enjoying being home and watching hockey. And our next date is here in Toronto playing the Mod Club. So pretty stoked about that. We're playing with another Canadian band called Rusty. So it should be an interesting night.
Right on, November 10th. If you're anywhere near the GTA area, check it out. Rob, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate your time and chatting some fantasy hockey with you.
My pleasure, guys. Best of luck with everything, and thanks for having me on.
All right, talk to you again, Rob. Thanks for joining us on Dobber Prospects Radio. Rob can be found on Twitter at Robert M. Higgins, and you can listen to his radio show, The Fantasy Hockey Show, on Fridays at 1 p.m. on the SiriusXM NHL Network. There is a link in our show notes on DobberProspects.com where you can get Rob's book, Higgins Hockey Fantasy Index. It's covering the 2010-11 season, but a lot of the information is relevant for any fantasy hockey manager. We also want to thank you, the listener, for continuing to support the DPR show. If you haven't yet, but want to support Dobber Prospects Radio, you can head to patreon.com/DPRshow and become a DPR patron by becoming a draft eligible, a late round sleeper, a first rounder, a scout, or even a corporate sponsor. Please make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at DPR_show. You can also follow or tweet our personal accounts at Zwombag and at P Harling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.